Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Alistair Nesbitt. How are you, Alistair?
I'm very good, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. You are a climate scientist, would that be a fair
thing
to say?
That's about right, yeah. Viticlimatologist, yeah.
Ooh, viticlimatologist. Sounds excellent. Sounds like something you have for breakfast. And what we're going to talk about today, in fact, we're going to do a couple of interviews with you because you've got some interesting things that you do, which is very fascinating. We're going to talk a wee bit about yourself today, and we're going to look at some of the work you've done on vineyard suitability mapping, which is basically trying to work out in the UK what the good sites are.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So before we get into that, though, tell us a wee bit about yourself. How long have you been a scientist? I understand you actually know someone we've interviewed as well, a climatologist.
I finished my PhD in viticulture and climate change just last year in the UK at the University of East Anglia. But I've actually been working in vineyards and in vineyard viticulture winery education for the last 10 to 15 years.
Were you into climate before then, or has wine got you into it?
Yeah, no, I think...
Or the British weather?
A bit of both, really. I mean, I've worked in vineyards and wineries around the world, and I've kind of, you know, developed the wine interest has always been there, and on the back of that, developed the interest in climate. I'd say my interest to do with climate probably started with the environment. Mm-hmm. I've always been keen on issues related to environment and environmental change. And as I progressed from managing vineyards, working in wineries, through to lecturing and teaching in viticulture and wine education, the issue, specifically because I'm in the UK, the issue of climate and climate change and its relationship with viticulture was really apparent. And I've become more and more interested in climatology and the effects on viticulture worldwide now. Culminating in obviously research in the area, and now also running a fledgling business looking to support individual growers and sectors around the world in helping understand how they can, what the threats are, what the opportunities are from changing climate conditions, and how they can best manage those.
Okay. You said you're doing some work on mapping the UK for suitability.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
We've just had a massive run of frosty weather. Frost has got to be a serious problem. But what are the key things you look at when you're trying to work out whether a vineyard is suitable for vineyards?
So there's really two different elements there. One is what is theoretically appropriate in a site for a vineyard. And the other then is looking in more detail at what the risks within a site might be. So you're right, we're doing a piece of work at the moment, not finished yet, but looking in real detail at very high resolution about where suitable vineyard sites are in the UK and where they might be in the future. And in that process, we're looking at lots of different aspects that feed into whether a site is or doesn't have potential. So as well as, for example, meteorological conditions, you know, historic rainfall levels, temperatures, ground frosts, air frosts, also looking at soil topography aspects, wind exposure, everything else, and bringing lots of different data sets and expertise together to come up with a grading system for sites, which will be useful, not just for people thinking of planting, but it'd be really useful for regional authorities in terms of looking at how they can help diversification away from traditional agricultural forms, potentially into viticulture as a new economy.
Would your mapping be suitable for, it sounds like it would be suitable for other types of agriculture, not just viticulture though, because yep. You know, once you've identified a site, whether you can grow an orange tree there or a Pinot Noir grape. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, there'll be slightly different variables that we could look at for different forms of agriculture. But what's interesting at the moment, actually, in terms of looking at different forms of agriculture is what the mapping's doing as we show it to, let's say, for example, a sugar beet farmer who's thinking of getting out of commodity-based crops into something where they've got a stronger link to their market, is that actually it's prompting them to think about what else they could grow there and think about how they've witnessed perhaps over the last 30, 40 years, conditions change, climatic conditions change, and what else they might be able to look to grow.
It is very much looking at that and also looking forward as well.
So that's the stage we're starting to work on now, is to look at, you know, forward planning. What are the opportunities, but also what are the risks? And that's useful, really, not just for people thinking of planting, but for people who've already got vineyards, thinking about how conditions might change going forward in the future and what they might be able to do to ameliorate or to adapt to different conditions. And I say that based on this work in the UK, but that's probably as relevant, if not more relevant, to vineyards elsewhere in the world.
Okay. You're saying that, well, we know that a lot of the vineyards in the UK are in the southeast, you know, Kent's, Essex possibly, Sussex, all around there. You know, there's a lot of people planting up there because they like the chalk in theory, yeah. Although some of the best vineyards, Camel Valley is one of my favourite UK vineyards, and he's not on chalk, he's down in Cornwall.
Yeah.
So chalk isn't necessarily a key requirement, but a lot of viticultural people think it is.
Yeah.
And there's vineyards in Leeds. I interviewed a guy, Richard Seeley. He's a geologist.
Yes, yes.
You probably know him years ago. And said,
from the same town, both from Dorking.
Are you? Yeah. That's right. He is Dorking, isn't he? He seemed to think that one day we may even be growing grapes in Loch Ness, on the banks of Loch Ness. I don't know. Let's start with Loch Ness, because that seems like a far-flung one.
Yeah. I think so. What we have to do when we're talking about grape growing is remember that, yeah, Vitis vinifera, vines that we commonly grow, are really have the ability to grow in an awful lot of climatic conditions. I mean, there are vineyards in Norway. You know, you could plant a vineyard in Iceland, Greenland.
It's in Denmark. I know there's Denmark. Yeah.
In Denmark, absolutely, southern Sweden. But what we've got to be careful about is differentiating the potential to grow a vine with a commercially viable business.
Yeah.
Now, when we get to talking about commercially viable businesses, we have to consider what the market is looking for in terms of cultivars, varietals. And then we start to get down into, okay, where would they grow and produce yields or generate businesses that are commercially viable? So we have to differentiate those two aspects. Now,
and also you've got to look at things like yield and whether
quality,
yeah, yeah, whether you can actually make money out of the
business. Resource markets, etc. I mean, if you know, the ideal for someone starting a vineyard is to, you know, when they're doing their business planning, is think about your market, first of all. Who's actually going to buy this product? What do they want? Where do they want it? What would they pay for it? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of work back from that. So in terms of where vineyards can be established in a commercially viable environment, in England, we've seen incredible success and you know, outrageously high quality for sparkling wine from vineyards across southern England, particularly the southeast and south central UK. But we're starting to look more now, and I myself am starting to get more excited about areas in Essex, Suffolk, South Norfolk that I think have got a lot of potential and are really underexplored at the moment. These are areas which, when we look at the raw data, we see that temperature levels may be a bit lower than, for example, the average for Kent or Sussex. But what we see is slightly lower rainfall during the growing season, slightly lower frost risk. We also, and this is critical, we also see less variability year on year, which in theory, from managing a vineyard perspective and looking at consistent yields, etc., is a positive. But we have to trade that off. One of the reasons vineyards haven't traditionally been planted in East Anglia is concerns around wind exposure and cool winds from the northeast. So we come back to this issue of getting the right site for the right cultivar to grow in the right area.
Just for the listeners, I'm sure you know cultivar is just a different grape species. Yeah. No, that's not a problem. I don't tend to use that word.
Variety. So,
yeah, grape variety, cultivar.
Cultivated variety. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's a bit of scientific speak.
Varietal it is. Yeah.
Okay. So you're looking at Norwich ways, really, aren't you? So if you think of where the UK is, like a pier, if you think of the UK as a pier and London is the bottom right-hand side of the pier, you're talking about areas sort of just to the east of London and all around the north part of London, really going up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the warmest vineyards, if you look at the data in the UK, is actually just outside of London, just to the north of London. I'm talking about Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk. Again, we're talking here about counties. So I could give you an average temperature, for example, for a county, but that's averaged across a huge area.
Yeah.
So what we're doing in this mapping work is really drilling down and looking at gridded temperature across, let's say, one 1 kilometer grids, or maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less. But and what you'll find is, for example, in, let's take Sussex, there are parts of Sussex which are a lot cooler than other parts. Same in Surrey. So yeah, we can find parts of Norfolk, Essex, Suffolk that are really warm. We can find parts that are really cool or have higher frost risks. We could also look over to the Midlands, Gloucestershire, Wales. The easiest way to actually show this is by producing a map, and that's what we're looking to do. And once you've got a map in front of you, you can see how variable conditions are across the UK during the growing season.
You did say the wind was an issue up there. One of the things we've been following is Rhett Finney's vineyard. I'm actually due to go and interview him again. Every year or so we go in and we see how he's going. He planted up, you know, lots of things. And then I went back and visited him. Next thing you know, he's putting windbreaks up everywhere because his site is very windy. And he didn't really get a good crop the first year because it was just too windy. And that was just his site-specific problem. But I can imagine wind can be a real problem in some areas.
It can. It's interesting. I mean, there's things you can do. You know, what's important here is there's things you can do about wind, okay, in certain sites. In other sites, maybe not so. When we're doing site assessments, you know, we try and grade the sites. And what we have to remind clients of is there is really no such thing as a perfect vineyard site. There's always a trade-off between something. So you mentioned there Rhett Finney. So, you know, Rhett Finney's got so many advantages. There's a lot of sunshine. There's a lot of heat. Next to no frost risk in the area. So it's
south-facing, nice slopes.
Absolutely.
At the bottom.
As with every vineyard site, there are trade-offs. If you can manage wind, if you can break or stop wind, or if you can plant in an area that's sheltered in Norfolk, Suffolk, for example, that mitigates those factors. And that's what we do as a business, go in and, you know, come up with solutions to help people take advantage of all of the beneficial aspects of a site. If there are some areas of concern, you know, put in recommendations so that they can ameliorate those and try and reduce those risks.
The work that you're doing, is it going to be published as a paper, or is it commercially sensitive?
That's a very good question. It's something we've talked about a lot in the research unit, and we are going to publish certainly elements of it. But one of the issues is with, you know, in a scientific paper, you've got very limited space. What we can't do is show every grid cell, but what we can do is put out some of the sort of certainly macro level data. Then there'll be elements of it that may or may not be commercialised. There's no decision made on that yet. But we'll certainly want to publish as much as we can. It's sort of in our vein as scientists. But obviously, we're also now running a commercial business. So
I know, it's quite a...
There's a bit of a trade-off to be had there. But look, our starting point is this, and that is we want to help ensure that, you know, the industry in the UK is very successful, and part of that is getting the right sites. And if we can help people get the right sites and plant the right varietals and manage their vineyards appropriately, that's for the good of everyone. So that's what we're focused on doing.
Okay. We've been talking about Norfolk, strangely enough, and Suffolk, Essex a little bit. Ben Witchell, you may remember Ben.
Yes.
He's the person who put me on to you. He says you're a jolly good fellow.
good on Ben. Checks in the post.
He's doing research. I'm hoping to help, because he can't sell his Bacchus that he's making from the EU funding.
Oh, okay.
Because it's, you're not allowed to make money from it. So I'm hoping to go up there and help him drain his tanks.
Good stuff, yeah. save some for me.
But if you're listening, Ben, that's what I think I'm due to
we'll
come
be
up soon.
we're just getting in the car now.
But he thinks Bacchus is a big grape variety up there. But Bacchus should be a grape variety, I think, that is better tolerant to the UK conditions than, say, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which I think are a bit more marginal.
Yep.
He thinks that Norfolk, Suffolk area is where Bacchus should be, but, you know, the money is in the fizz.
I mean, Bacchus has been grown elsewhere in the UK for a long time. Yeah. I think what Ben's doing is really, you know, he's been undertaking some very, very useful trials to sort of understand
flavors,
profiling of Bacchus, which is really going to help it develop, I think, as a quite a known English wine style. If you've had any,
and you can pronounce it,
yeah. So what we're seeing at the moment is obviously an awful lot of vineyards planting with sparkling varietals, and I'm sure that's going to happen in East Anglia and other areas as well as the southeast. But also, you know, there's market shelf that, sorry, there's market space, shelf space for other types of English wine other than sparkling. And for people looking for a quicker return on investment or wanting to do something differently or targeting a specific market, putting R&D into Bacchus and other still varieties is incredibly useful. And knowing Ben, that, you know, the quality is going to be brilliant. He's a very, very good, you know, winemaker, and I'm sure he's going to do a great job.
Do you think that the move to sparkling wine and a more marginal grape variety, grape varietals, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay in the UK, is necessarily a good thing from a quality point of view? Because, you know, the old grape varieties, Schlumberger, Rackenstein, Rondo, all those sort of were traditional.
Well, you might traditional Germanic varieties, maybe. Yeah. Again, interesting question. So it comes back to this kind of theory versus practice. You look at the data that we've published in the paper that I've given to you to read last year, and what that shows is when those more traditional varieties were dominant, yields were higher. Okay. But does the market want them? I suspect not as much as it wants the really high quality, awesome English sparkling wine that's now being produced. So you've got to think, if you're going to plant a vineyard, where do you start? And your starting point's the market. And if the market's looking for English sparkling wine and you want to produce some of the best wine in the world, that's what you'd plant. So this term marginal for, you know, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, marginal compared to some of the other traditional varieties in terms of yield, yes, but not marginal when it comes to what the market's looking for. Mm. In terms of return, yields are lower, undoubtedly. And that's a challenge for the industry in the UK, and that's not a challenge that's going to be resolved overnight. It's a challenge that's going to take time. And what I say to someone thinking about going in is, you know, they need to build into their business plans realistic yields, because I've seen a few that really aren't realistic, and they need to build in realistic yields, and they need to build in variability from year to year, and they need to be able to attract a price point that the market's willing to pay that accounts for those lower than, you know, international average yields.
I was interviewing Bob Lindo from Camel Valley a couple of years ago, and he was talking about all the new vineyards being planted up and their business models. And one of the things, because he's been growing grapes down there for quite some time, is he said, you know, these businesses are all great, except for they haven't allowed for the fact that every now and then you will get no crop.
That's right.
You will just lose a year.
Yep.
It's gone. And that's quite a risk.
Yeah, it is a risk. And I think we're one of the first to actually start publishing data showing yield variability year on year and how the relationship between that and weather. And, you know, the two are intrinsically linked. We can't get away from this fact that we're not California, we're not Bordeaux. We're an island surrounded by water, and we're obsessed with weather. And the reason we're obsessed with weather is because we get so much of it. So we have to differentiate between climate and long-term changes and trends and averages to what's actually happening this week, next month, and how's that affecting our yield. And the two are quite different, okay? There's a relationship, but they're quite different when we talk about vineyard viability.
I think what we're going to do, Alice, is I think this makes a really nice point, because next week we're going to talk about this in a lot more detail. We're going to look at your paper that you published as well,
okay,
which is fabulous.
Great.
And I think we'll finish this interview now, and we'll I think next week we'll have a good look at this paper
Great.
That you talked about.
Yeah, look forward to it.
It looks good. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.